Good evening, everybody. How are you? I'm Judy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Amen. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the first floor restrooms, and which are across the main foyer there, and this room exclusively. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of these simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step we're discussing tonight. And tonight we're on step 9, and I'll turn it over to Graham.
Thanks, Judy. I'm Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight to the Simple Actions group. Thanks for coming along. And like Judy said, tonight we're going to be talking about steps 8 and 9. And we're just going to be sharing our experience, strength, and hope of taking those steps and what it's been like for us. We're not really experts on the Big Book. There's people in here that know much more about it than we do. We're not really here to teach people about the book. We just have found that, you know, when we sponsor people and take them through the book, they have an experience. Their life changes. My life changed. And it was as a result of taking the simple actions of AA, part of which is the steps out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, we're going to kick off on page 76. And I believe Judy and David left off. We've just done steps 6 and 7. So this is really picking up right after that. It's on page 76, and the paragraph begins, "Now we need more action." So let's read it. "Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol." Oh my goodness. Now, we talked before about step 4, that's the favourite time, to leave AA. When the sponsor's like, "Let's sit down and do step 4, hordes of people running out the door. "I'm not doing that, are you kidding me?" Off to the doctor or whatever, you know, boom, out the door, out to the bar. "I'm not doing that." This is the next most favourite time to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, step 8 and step 9. And to be honest with you, I had my eye on this the whole time. because I'm not a rocket scientist, but I realized really what it was saying was I was going to have to face some of these people that I had really screwed over, and that wasn't too appealing to me. And my sense of horror grew as we went through the steps, because it became apparent to me that what we were actually talking about was making amends to the people that I hate on my inventory. All those people that I resent, those are primarily the people I'm going to be making amends to, and I don't want to make amends to you because you screwed me over and hurt me. So I love this bit, and I love to say this because I like a laugh. Sometimes you go around the meetings and you'll hear people saying that when they had finished step five with their sponsor encouraged them to set fire to the fourth step. sometimes the sponsor will even do it with them, like they'll go outside and they'll be like, okay, we're going to burn the past. And the fourth step will be blazing and they'll say something like, I release you. And that's like some sort of magic spell, because AA is all about some sort of magic spell. Let's do some spells. What, I mean, are we wizards? What's going on in here? Is this some sort of witchcraft? Are you kidding me? What's with all these big public demonstrations of faith? I think really that's kind of ridiculous, and it doesn't say that. And then it says we have a list, and the list it's talking about is the thing that you just burned. See what I mean? We need it. So it's interesting, and listen to the language, because when I started off that fourth step and I wrote that second column, it was all about how you harmed me. That's my perception of the world. The world is a savage place, and I'm a poor little victim called Graham, who's got great intentions, and I'm a really nice guy, and I've been screwed over by everybody, all these horrible people. That's my world view. And now it's completely turned round. Those are the people that I've harmed. And that's pretty huge. That switch happens very quickly. So I'm no longer the victim. Now I have to take responsibility for the way I treated people. And that's a bitter pill to swallow, so I'm not surprised that this is a great time to leave AA or just not do these amends. So anyway. And it says we go out to these people and repair the damage done in the past. And again, it comes back to what is really my main problem. And I met with some guys on Sunday morning, and it was a really nice line that we highlighted when we were talking. And it just said, liquor was but a symptom. And I need to remember that, because I think that's what's wrong with me is I've got a drink problem. So if I stop drinking, I'll be fine. Right? Well, if you've got a drink problem, that is right. And the good news is you never need to come to one of these meetings ever again. But you see, I don't have a drink problem. Liquor is just a symptom of my problem. The problem is I have alcoholism. And it kind of looks like a drink problem. But the only difference is when I stop drinking, everything's not fine. When I stop drinking, I start thinking. And I start feeling. And I start remembering all the things I did in the past. The way I treated my mother. The way I treated my sisters, the domestic violence that I was the perpetrator of, the stealing, the lying, the cheating, all through the years, letting people down. I start remembering all that, and I start getting mad at people, start getting mad at my position in life. That's how I am sober. It's unbearable. And you know what takes that away? Let's have a drink, baby. Let's have another one. That feels good. The next thing you know, I'm in a blackout, and I'm doing the crazy stuff again. I didn't know that's what was wrong with me. Anyway, so it comes back to this. What is the problem then? It tells me here. Me running my life. Me being so self-obsessed that I actually act as if I'm God. And I play that out every day. And then it says, if you're not willing to do this, ask until it comes. And then the final sentence. It was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So really, if I don't want to make an amend to somebody, and we'll get into that later, because I don't know about Judy, but I've got a lot of experience of not wanting to make amends to people and procrastinating on it. But really what's going on there, I don't have a problem with step 9. I have a problem with step 1. I don't really think I'm as bad as the people in AA, because apparently what I'm saying is I don't need to make amends to that person. Because I may be an alcoholic, but I'm a special, different kind of alcoholic that nobody else really understands. So I don't need to do the things that they do. And I don't believe that's true for me. I'm just a common or garden drunk. Just an alcoholic like everybody else in here. And I need to do these things if I want victory over alcohol. And if I want to stay sober. So it's not about drinking, but it is about drinking. Judy?
Yeah, okay. So, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal and in the fifth step, and now we're going to go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. So, you know, I looked up those two words, repair and damage, and it's always been very helpful to me to look words up that I think I know what they mean, because they mean a lot of different things to me in this context than they do outside of this. So damage is harm that reduces value or usefulness, which is really a powerful statement. The value or usefulness, we're sweeping away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. So here we are back at, you know, it isn't a drink problem. What I'm really trying to straighten out here is my running my life on self-will. Once the alcohol is out of my life, then I have to deal with the self-will. And this is the panoramic view of my self-will in action and what I have to do to really make myself useful. It's not even... we use the word repair and damage, but the fact is, I'm not going to repair this. That's not even within my power to do. What I'm doing is setting myself voluntarily before God and before my fellows and getting rid of what's blocking me from you. And I'm not willing always to do that. It's very painful because it makes me painfully aware of myself in a way that I'm a delusional thinker. So if I want to change a scene, I'm talking about in sobriety now. In sobriety, I can change a scene with my thinking. And it's usually some delusional thing. It's either really good or it's really bad. And I don't have a good grasp on how I'm impacting people because I have this delusional thinking. I mean, this doesn't get removed only to the extent that it's useful to God, really, not to me. It isn't about me. So really what I'm trying to do is really get clear about harm. What kind of harm do we do to other people? And in the step book, it uses this phrase, the well-being of others. Talks about the well-being of others. And my first sponsor talked to me about that a lot, the well-being of others. And extremely self-centered people can't connect to the well-being of others in any way. So by the time I'm at this point, I certainly have some connection to that, you know. And if I don't, I'm not here. So, okay, I'm just gonna say this one last thing because I don't want to talk about the whole thing before we even get to the paragraphs, where it says, "If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes." And to me, that's the ninth step prayer. There's two places. There's another place in the later paragraphs where I consider that this is the ninth step prayer. And every step has a prayer. If you look at the whole text, every time it says, we ask God, and that means stop and pray. Okay, let me let that go.
We're going to continue on page 76. The paragraph begins, probably there are. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end to it in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So, I have definitely felt diffident about going to people, business acquaintances and friends that I've hurt, and talking to them about basically making amends to them. And this idea, you know, this idea that I'm going to go around and tell everybody I found God, you know, I want you to look at that from my parents' perspective. Okay, so I'm a guy that when I lived with my parents, and my mother told my wife this. This was years after I got sober. She told my wife that up until the age of 13, I was, and I quote, an angel. And she said, and when he was 13, something happened to him. And he really got off the track. And he only came back when he came back from Japan. And that was, of course, when I got sober, when I was 25. So between the ages of 13 and 25, those 12 years, I primarily lived with my parents. And it was a nightmare for them. They later told me that that was the worst decade of their now 45-year marriage. It was awful for them. And I didn't know what was going on, and they didn't know what was going on either. But I'll tell you some of the ways that my alcoholism manifested in that house. There was a lot of stealing. There was lying. There was violence. There was intimidation. There was me creating chaos in the family. One of my sisters fitted a lock to her bedroom door because I needed to get high and drunk so much that I would just steal anything that was lying around and sell it to get money. And my parents, not knowing what they were dealing with, just kept taking me back and kept what I now understand what they were doing is they were loving me because I'm their son. And I treated that with contempt and threw it right back in their face. So after 12 years of that, and I could go on and on all night about some of the sketchy things I pulled with my parents and the shocking way that I treated them. I could tell you all night about that. But the bottom line is, and now I'm going to go to my mum and dad and say, I found God, everything's fine. What am I expecting here? You know, and I had a sponsor called Lance. And he was a big book sponsor. And he said, Graham, just shut up. How about you just shut up about being an alcoholic? How about you just shut your big mouth about trying to get everybody to understand you and how you feel? Who cares? Who cares about you? Just be quiet. You've done a lot of damage to these people. Just leave them alone. And why? And instead of trying to convince them that you're an alcoholic and that you need to be understood, how about you start acting like a son? Yeah, and I'm like, and he said, and if you want to know what a son does, look at your brother-in-law. He's not an alcoholic, is he? And I'm like, no. He's like, well, just try and do what he does. And when I looked at my brother-in-law, I saw a guy that visited his mother regularly, his mum and dad, was an asset in the family. He showed up, didn't get drunk, he wasn't stealing anything off anybody. He's paying people back money that he owed them and so forth. So this idea that I'm going to run around town talking about God is really a bit much, to be honest. You know? And at this stage anyway, what do I really know about God? I'm not saying I know anything about it now, but what do I really know to be telling people? So, and the other thing I really like about this whole thing is that a lot of the times in AA becomes like a psychology class. A become like the steps. It's like, okay, because most people in AA are pretty smart. Well, that's only in AA you'll hear people saying that. But most people in AA, especially me, are pretty smart. And I mean, yeah, I'm the smartest guy in this room. There's no doubt in my mind about that, and I'm not joking. But you know, I can figure this stuff out, and these steps become like an intellectual exercise for me. Oh, and again, it gets back to that thing like burning the fourth step. It's like, oh, I don't feel right. I'm going to do a step four, and then I'll do a step six, and then I'll do a step nine. It's like some series of enchantments to make me feel better. It's bizarre. Is that what we're trying to do here? Feel better. What happens if I get sober and I don't feel better? Does that mean I can go and get drunk? Am I in AA to get a warm, fuzzy feeling? Oh, that meeting was great. I got such a warm, fuzzy feeling. Thanks, God. Are you kidding me? Is that what we're doing in here? Because I've been long periods in AA when I wasn't feeling good. Like that time my kid got brain damaged and almost died. I wasn't feeling good. What should I do? Go and get drunk. Or that time I just felt depressed for no reason, and I still don't know why I felt depressed for 2 or 3 years, waking up every morning thinking I wish I was dead at 2 or 3 years sober. But we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about warm fuzzies. Never had a bad day sober. So come on, let's be real here. So, you know, I'm not in here necessarily to feel better, and hopefully I will feel better. Okay, hopefully that's going to happen. But really why I'm here and why I'm doing these steps is so I can get that stuff in order, that stuff being me, my selfishness to some extent, so I can do what's going to keep me sober. And what's going to keep me sober more than anything else is helping other people. But I don't want anything to do with that because I'm extremely selfish and I want you to help me. And the people in AA are like, that's not how this works. You do the steps and you help other people. And helping other people, I do the steps to get in a position where I can do that effectively. I can't hear that enough because I forget that every single day. It all becomes about me again, what I'm getting, because I'm such a taker. And really what this is telling me is, no, Graham, this is about getting out of yourself and giving. And that's why we're doing this. And the final thing I'll say is, you know, I have this experience a lot. I'm not an atheist. I used to be an atheist when I came to AA. I'm not an atheist today. And I'm not against God. Not against God at all. I pray every single day. Multiple times. However, nothing can so much turn people off. AA and me when I'm out making amends is me going on and on about God and making claims about God. And I think some people find that. I know when I came to AA, that was pretty difficult for me to swallow. So I think what it's saying in here is, you know, if it will do some good, talk about it by all means. Just calm down. Just be careful. Be tactful, you know. And I think that's good advice. Judy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have always, it's been my experience that I'm easily distracted. And things can take my attention, especially things can take my attention that will take me off the point of what I'm supposed to be doing and put myself in some arena where I don't even belong. So, and that's exactly what this paragraph is talking about. When I first came to AA, I was all about, just as Graham just described, you know, oh, I've got to explain this to my family, and my family's got to help me. Well, I had been used to my family cleaning up my messes. So I figured, well, they need to be involved in this too. Because everybody, it's a party where I am, right? I got to bring everybody in. And so she said to me, just very, very, very frankly, she said to me, your family can't help you with this. And it's really not their problem. So why don't you come to AA and get sober and be a participant in your family instead of dragging your family into this? And I was horrified, of course. And why I was horrified is because it made me very afraid, because I had manipulated and driven these people, you know, my parents especially. I have the same story, 13. That's what my mother said to me. "You were such a sweet child. What happened?" And 13, and 13 happened, and I was, you know, just a, and my whole personality changed, aided by drugs and alcohol. I just will add that. But what she didn't know about me was, long before I was 13, I was stealing money out of her purse. I was making up stories. So I had this problem, mental problem, and mental obsession with myself long before I ever took a drink. In fact, I think 13 was as long as I could go under those conditions. Drinking made it possible for me to continue to breathe. Because if I didn't drink, I really think I would have taken my life, 13 or 14. Because after a while, you just can't stand it anymore. And I couldn't stand it. And I mean, I would lie about anything. I just make up any story. Whatever I wanted to do, it's all about what I want. And I'll just tell this briefly because it's a good example of the of exactly what Graham was just saying about it, this not being a ninth step problem. If you can't do this, it's a first step problem. I know who I am, and I know that when I was 6 years old, the school closed. I went home with this kid, and I liked this place. This was a nice home. There was a nanny. There was lots of toys, and a kid had her own bedroom. I didn't have my own bedroom, and I really liked it. So the nanny says, "Call. You know, you need to call your parents and tell them where you are." Okay, so I pick up the phone. Well, there was something wrong with the phone system. I couldn't get my parents. I just acted like I was talking to my mother. "Oh, yeah, Mom, this is great." So when I finally, you know, got home, there's my mother standing on the street corner with the D.C. police who have been called, because now I've been missing for, you know, whatever, since 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 7 o'clock at night. Because these people finally said, "Look, we're taking you home. We don't care how many times you make the phone call. We're done with you now. You need to go home." And but that's, I mean, that was going on when I was 6. So you can imagine by the time I got to 13, I needed a drink. So anyway, so I qualify to be here, really. So our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. It's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice. So it is just an abomination for me to even talk about anything but what I'm doing there. Because really, you want to talk about God? The rest of us have been out here believing in God, working with God, having a relationship with God. The whole time you've been screwing us. So please don't tell me about God. Leave it home. And I've been on the other side of this for years with my sister. And anyway, I won't go into that. But I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the side of having somebody trying to make amends to me who threw that at me and continues to do. And what it does, this is what it does, being on this side of it, is it's the most disingenuous experience I've ever had, because it's not real. This person that's on the other side of this making this amend to me has absolutely no faith in God, because she wouldn't be talking about God if she did. Because a real faith in God and a real belief in God and a real relationship with God just makes you humble. You don't even want to talk about what you believe and what you've found. You're ready to say, "I absolutely did not value you at all. Consider you for 2 minutes. All I could think about was what I wanted." To be able to look somebody in the eye and say that, that's really tough. Really tough. And I've had to do it just in my current life, you know? I mean, this doesn't, you don't do this once. One day at work, I went down, you know, I'm all busy, I'm all up in my head, you know, everything's about me and so important, what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what I need to do, what I can't do, what I'm afraid of, you know, it's all whirling around in my head. And I go downstairs to the floor and try to help somebody with something, and I'm agitated. Now, this is my job, by the way. I'm supposed to be out on the floor helping these people, and I'm agitated that I've got to stand there and help somebody, and this salesperson isn't going to step in and take over when I deemed only in my head that it was appropriate for her to do so. Have I told her that? Have I indicated that? Not at all. So I help the customer, and then I make some wise ass remark to her, and I leave the floor and I go upstairs and I said, oh my God. So I have to go. First I have to examine that, figure out what I've done wrong and why I did that, and I had to go right back down there and tell her I was wrong. Because the thing about this is, when you live like a drunk and you have relationships with people and you do that kind of crap and you're a drunk, what you do is, when you've used the people up, you just move. You just go get another job. You go marry somebody else. Whatever. You change locations and do it again. When you're sober, you don't get to do that. And I've been instructed in my sobriety, you need to stand still. I need another job. No, you don't. You need to stand still. And when God needs you to move, when God wants you to do, move, when it's time for a new job, it'll be presented for you. Whatever it is you need to do right now, you need to do. You need to face yourself as you are. You need to address these things now. You don't get to run away. And I've been talked to very sternly about that because I'm a runner. So, and I'd be lying to you if I told you I didn't think that way on days, you know. If I don't want to do something, I really want a new job. So, the principle that's in this step is that I'm responsible for everything I think, everything I say, and everything I do. And I'm accountable to the people that I'm around to behave right. And if I don't make myself accountable to those things, to this principle, then I am going to be back drinking or using alcohol in some other form and taking my life and harming people and dressing it up and saying it's something else, because that's what we do. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to go on to page 77 now. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And, though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. So, this is now really talking about some of these people on the resentment list that I've actively hated, you know, and just going back a little bit, you know, just reminding myself, resentment means to re-feel. So what happens is you do something to me, and this is really important, or I think you do something to me, and that's very important, because there's a lot of that. It didn't actually happen. I just think it did. But you do something to me, or I think you did something to me that doesn't somehow meet with my approval, and I feel some discomfort or pain. And then I resense it, I resent you, I refeel it over and over again. And often each time I refeel it, I embellish it. And I put a little more gas on it. So I'm having, you know, you did something to me 2 weeks ago and I'm standing in the shower on my own telling you off. And you're not there, it's just me. And I'm like, yeah, who does she think she is saying that to me? I'll show her, you know, as I'm getting washed in the morning or whatever. And it goes on. It goes on indefinitely. And then the closer you are to me, the more instances of those things that are. So if you're my neighbor, there's maybe one or two things. If you're lucky enough to be married to me, it's a constant thing. Just like, it's a constant inventory taking of stuff that you're doing wrong. And it just filters in and feeds the fire. And what I didn't realize was that the function of all this, why do I even think like that about people? Well, what I didn't realize was is that when I keep score against everybody, so if I resent everybody in this room, when I see you, just imagine a little list beside the person's head of the stuff they did wrong to me. Some people, there's just a couple of things. Some there's a big, long list of stuff they did wrong. And that's what I'm like with everybody. Now, why do I even bother doing that? Well, what it seems to do is it allows me to treat you bad. And it allows me to keep behaving the way I've always behaved. Because if you did all these things wrong to me, then it's okay for me to steal some money off you or give you the bird or whatever it is. Do something shady behind your back, bad mouth you behind your back, gossiping about people in AA. That's one of my hobbies. I love it. So, like to put people down, make myself feel better. Oh, yes. Those people suck. Oh, I feel so good. But I know nobody else in here has ever done that. It's just me. So the bottom line is that what I didn't realize was is that this behavior actually was a system that worked reasonably well, as long as it worked. It allowed me to continue. So if I don't want to make amends to people, if I don't want to make amends to you, is it because I want to reserve the right to treat you bad in the future? Because if I really face up to you and just say, you know what, I was wrong, and I want to set right the wrong, and then just shut up. If I really do that, then it presupposes there's going to be a change in my behavior moving forward toward you. And that's what's difficult, especially people that I'm in relationship with, who I'm going to keep seeing. It's not so difficult like the guy at the car dealership that I exploded at and bitched him out. You know, I can go down and apologize to that guy, make amends to him, but I'm probably never going to see him again. So, and it talks a lot about people that I've hated and how it's actually better for me to go to them. And we don't have a lot of time, but you know, I have done this over and over again. It's not something that was just done and then I'm sober now, so I'm good and I never do these things again. This is an ongoing thing. I continue to manufacture resentments towards people. I continue to do the wrong thing at times. I continue to make decisions based on self. But the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I have the opportunity, no matter what's going on and no matter what it is I've done, I have the opportunity to hit the reset button. I have the opportunity to make a new start. I have the opportunity to go to people that I've harmed and make amends and to try better next time. And I'm actually trying to get a new job right now. I'm going for a job interview tomorrow. And I'm somebody in sobriety that has run away. How do you think I ended up here, my friends? So I would never, ever, discount or talk down the beauty of running away, the beauty of the new start. Because if it works, it works. And I'm telling you, if you move town, you get a couple of weeks. And if you move continent, it's 2 months, baby. You get 2 months of yes. So, you know, that is one of my solutions. Drink, run away, kill yourself. That's my three solutions to life. I can't drink because I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going to kill myself because I won't be around to see everybody suffer. So let's get the hell out of here. Thanks, Judy.
Okay. Yeah, it brings up a good point, the mental permission to behave badly. Alcoholism is a chronic illness, so that means it doesn't get cured. And, they in the earlier part of the book, we're talking about how often we can't remember what happened the last time we drank. Somehow, faced with all the evidence, I can give myself a mental permission to drink again. even after the most horrific thing that may have happened the last time. So this is the manifestation of that, of the chronic illness at this point that I have to identify. I'm definitely it's an ongoing, this is never finished. That's the point I want to make. Okay.
So we're going to go on page 77 now. And there's two paragraphs we're going to read. It starts off under no condition. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemy sometimes praise what we are doing and wishes well. Occasionally they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. And again, you know, without going into big storytelling about different amends that I made, I've definitely gone to people that I hated. And I have to tell you, it's very liberating. You just call them up and make an appointment. And of course, my sponsor's telling me to do this. And I've procrastinated as much as I can. And in my mind, I'm still grasping at the second column of what you did to me. Yeah, but he did this and she said that. You know, I'm grasping at it, but I know that I have to do this because I want to get over drinking. I don't want to drink. And I'm an alcoholic. And there doesn't really seem any other way for me to do this. If there was, I would have done it. So even as I'm grasping at that, I'm praying, God, give me the willingness. And I call the person up and I make an appointment and then I go and see them. And I have to tell you, the freedom of just sitting down in front of somebody who I have wasted countless hours judging and condemning and criticizing and hating in my mind. I've wasted hundreds, thousands of hours of my life hating people, judging people, condemning people in here when I could have been out here living life. And I can't tell you how freeing it is just to sit down and humbly say, you know what? I did A, B, and C to you. I was wrong to behave that way. I treated you badly. I was wrong. I regret treating you that way. What can I do to make it right between us? And just shut up. And I can't tell you the beautiful sensation of freedom that I've experienced after sitting down and doing that. And you know, a lot of those people never spoke. Some of them wouldn't even meet me because they hated me so much. The woman that I smacked around, the woman that I loved, she wouldn't even speak to me ever again. You know, and then there was other people that just sort of said, this is ridiculous. You know, I don't even know what you're talking about. You weren't that bad. And then there was still other people who, like it said, admitted their faults too. But that's not the point. The point is I showed up and I did it. And I have to tell you, every time I've done this, I get free from being trapped in my head, from that person. I'm chained to that person when I resent them. There's a chain and I'm carrying them around with me. And then I see them and I have to duck. You know that feeling? You see somebody and you have to go like that. Oh, shit. You know, you want to live like that? Apparently, I do want to live like that. Because there's some people that I'm not willing to make amends to at times.
So, just to follow on, so what can I do to make it right? It's really not, I'm not looking for an assignment. What I'm really looking for is to give something I haven't given that person, which is room to speak and for me to be conscious, fully present to them. That's an experience that somebody on the other side of an amend I'm making has never had with me. I've never been fully conscious or present to them or listening to them. Or cared about them, just because, not because of what they're going to do for me or what I'm going to get out of the relationship, But listen, this is a total unselfishness to listen to them, to hear what's important to them. And that's what I didn't do. If it wasn't important to me, I don't want to hear about it, you know? Or I'd just listen and not have, well, I didn't listen. I'd just, you know, physically be in the room, but not engage or connect. I was totally unable to appreciate something that was important to you if it wasn't important to me. Oh my goodness, that is a horrible, horrible thing to not be able to do that. And I couldn't do it for years in sobriety. Good number of years. My amends to my daughter, I'm going to be able to soon sit down with her and actually talk to her. I haven't been able to do that because most of the time I've been sober, I have to tell you, I have not been okay. The time I was with her and raising her, it was all I could do to just take care of her, make sure her needs were met, and that was it. That's all I could do. I'm so self-involved and so self-focused. I have suffered terrible from this illness. And I would be, you know, she'd be telling me stuff. She's a very involved young lady. I mean, I had her in everything because I knew I had nothing to give her, nothing. So I had her in everything. And she'd be telling me stuff, you know, oh, we've got band practice, we've got this going on. She was in 5,000 things. And she could see that I wasn't listening. And then I'd know I wasn't listening, and I'd have to make her go back over something she just told me. So I tell you that because just because you have a desire to do this or willingness to do this or you think you're supposed to do it, getting to the point where you can actually do this and have it have impact and mean something and be connected to it, I mean, it's taken a long time for me. A long time. Very, very sick. I've been very sick. And I, so anyway, I just want to say that I can't really make it right. I have got to just give those people room to be who they are. It's been the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And it's taken, there's years of blocks, building blocks of doing this to restore this relationship with this kid who's about to have her own child. So I'll stop there.
Okay, page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And the bit we read before this in the talk, we've really been talking about making amends for resentments on the fourth step inventory. Now it's moving into fear. And there's a fear inventory as well. So the inventory is really split up into three bits, and the amends are also split up into three bits: resentment, fear, and sex. So it's talking about fear now. It's talking about money. It says most alcoholics owe money. That means most. It means what it says. And, you know, it says in here, you know, that we have to have a sincere desire to set right the wrong. And in this case, setting right the wrong means paying them back their money. It's pretty simple. And I'm somebody that doesn't like to do that. I like, one of my favourite words is the word spend. I love the word spend. It's sort of sexy. It's like, spend. Let's spend. What are you doing tonight? I'm spending. Okay? Now, I want to tell you this other word that I hate. This word actually makes me feel physically sick. Budget. Okay? Budget. It's like, what? It's so boring. You know, don't even... I recently, just the other day, my wife was like, we need to talk about money. And I'm like, don't spoil the weekend. Let's talk about it some other time. Because I want to live in a fantasy with money. And the fantasy is I can just buy whatever I want. And I'll use your money as well if you'll let me. Let's spend. and very a lot of dishonesty around money to this day. And so when I got sober, you know, I was able to make direct amends. I owed a lot of people money, and I was able to set that right by paying them back the money. That was one of the fundamental things in that relationship, was to pay the money back. And they were happy when I did that. And I did that. But in recovery, recently, you know, we owe my father-in-law a sum of money. And listen to this. My wife and I have been slow to pay it back. And there's been lots of excuses around that, but basically we could have paid it back. And what I notice is my relationship with my father-in-law mysteriously gets worse when we're not making those payments. He doesn't seem so friendly. I wonder why. Because how do I feel if somebody owes me a bunch of money and they said they would pay it back and they're not paying it back? Yeah, but that's different, right? So it's very interesting to me that when I pay my creditors, my fear of my father-in-law, when we're paying him and we're up to date, the fear subsides and we have a nicer relationship. When I decide not to do that, there's always a great excuse for not doing it. The fear level rises up again. And so it's important for me to try the best I can. But I have to tell you, this is it's very spotty with me, finances. Don't ever come to me asking me for financial advice. You shouldn't ask me.
Yeah, I have the same problem. It's the inability, the fear just breeds self-centeredness, breeds dishonesty. Mm-hmm. That's the cycle, you know. And if I take care of things, then I am less afraid. If I take care of things by doing what I can do and then also living my life according to these principles, I'm less self-obsessed, which frees me up to not have some block between me and you. And that's really the point. I'll just stop there.
Okay, we'll just read the last paragraph. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. And, you know, I think the final thing I would say about all this is it's very important to have a sponsor. It's very important to have a sponsor who's active in AA and who's actively doing the steps themselves. And to get some guidance from them about amends. I'm somebody that tends to exaggerate. I know you'll find this difficult to believe. I exaggerate my own importance. So there's some stuff that I think, oh, I need to go make amends for that. And my sponsor's like, well, that was like 7 years ago, and the person probably doesn't even know who you are anymore, you know. So there's things like that that I'll latch on to. And then there's other amends which I'm like, I don't need to make amends to them because they did this to me. And then I need somebody to say, well, actually, we're going to discount what they did. What about how you were selfish and dishonest, Graham? So it's very, very important to have a sponsor in this. And, you know, sometimes the way that when I ask people what I can do to make it right, I hear things that I don't like. You know, like my sister said, well, we kind of noticed that you only call me when you want something. And the rest of the time I don't hear from you. It would be nice for me and my kids if, like, you came around regularly and called me regularly, you know? So I had an assignment. She wanted me to call her every week, and she wanted me to go and see her kids. She wanted me to be a brother and an uncle, and I wasn't doing that, and she was happy to point that out because I asked her. So that gave me a guide as to what I could do to at least try and balance the books to some extent. Even though that doesn't really make up for the stuff I did to her. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really not interested in things that take time away from me. I'll just add to that. And the sponsor is important, and the end result of this is clearing this wreckage away gives me a ability to have God free me up, and God frees me up, and then I can hear him, and I can do things that I had no idea I could do. It just, my whole life changes, and I help other people, and I'm able to do and be something I never was, which is how they define a spiritual experience. So, okay, let's wrap it up. Thank you, everybody. We're going to pass these baskets.
Mm-hmm. I'll get up and pass them.
Oh, here we go.
Thanks, Jim.
The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose: to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any announcements tonight?
I'll make an announcement. This home group's having a supper and a speaker on April Fool's Day. So it really is happening. It's on the 1st of April. And a lady called Christy is coming down. The food will be at 6 and the speaker's at 7. 1st of April in here.
Cool. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. All home group members, please raise your hands. We have literature, on the back table. Please see any of the home group members if you're interested in that. Do we have anybody new in the room tonight? First AA meeting, early in sobriety, if you'd like to introduce yourself so we can get to know you a little bit. Yes, sir.
Hey, Kevin. Welcome.
Anybody else? Okay. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? And in closing, thank you to everybody who came out tonight. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight, and all are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza. And Graham has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Okay. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. See to it that your relationship... Sorry, I read that already. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank
Amen.
You.
Thank you. If you'd like to join us for the Lord's Prayer.
I think we're going in front of the table. Jim, you coming in?
Count the money.
There you go.
Nice job.
Right.